Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining the Relax Back UK show. The topic this week is getting us all to build health resilience for the long term and in the process, hopefully, relieving some pressure on the NHS. My guest is Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, and we start with our health habits and get to the heart of the problem.
And what we found, Mike, is that as a nation, we're quite reactive when it comes to health rather than proactive.
We look at the sorts of things this lack of proactivity leads to.
The problem, however, Mike, is that reactive approach to health really gets us into trouble when we think about the big killers these days, sure. Right? So the things that are crippling the NHS and crippling the quality of people's lives are things like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, strokes, some forms of cancer, and dementia. You know, dementia cases are on the rise.
Then we discuss a potential way of avoiding all this. So do keep listening to find out what that is and stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Dr. Chatterjee was a great guest, good fun and very informative. Anecdotally, people say that it's very difficult to see a doctor now such that they don't bother or they give up. So my first question was, is that really true? And are there any stats to go along with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we recently conducted a survey with my colleagues at Do Health. We surveyed over 2,000 adults and there's many things that came up from that survey, but more than a third of adults said they have not visited their GP in the past year at all, which I don't think is necessarily a huge problem in and of itself. You know, if you're feeling well and you're getting on with your life, I don't think you have to go and see a doctor necessarily. But I think what this survey was designed to do was to really understand our relationship as a nation with health. And what we found, Mike, is that as a nation, we're quite reactive when it comes to health rather than proactive. So, some stats from the survey, which might sort of put some meat on the bone, as it were, here, are that 77% of adults said they'd rather struggle on with a headache rather than make an appointment with a healthcare professional, 74% with a sore throat, 66% with stomach ache. And people kind of expect me to say, oh, they should be going to see their doctors for that. I actually don't believe that. I think it's okay for people not to and wait and see if these things get better by themselves, because usually they do. The problem, however, Mike, is that reactive approach to health really gets us into trouble when we think about the big killers these days, sure. Right? So the things that are crippling the NHS and crippling the quality of people's lives are things like type 2 diabetes, heart disease, strokes, some forms of cancer, and dementia. You know, dementia cases are on the rise and are a huge cause of fear for people. You know, a lot of people are thinking, oh man, I don't want to get dementia like my mum.
Or have I got it already?
Well, you've just highlighted a key point there, Mike, which is these conditions don't happen overnight, right? They build up in the body for years before you get the diagnosis. I'll give you two concrete examples. We know from the data that type 2 diabetes starts 5 to 10 years beforehand in the body. Alzheimer's dementia starts maybe 30 years beforehand in the body. So here's the problem at the moment, Mike. We've got an NHS which is really good at managing you when you're sick. I think the NHS does that very, very well. If you're sick, you have a disease, you get awesome treatment. What I don't think the NHS does very well is prevention, is get involved early. I don't think there's the resource there to do that. And I don't think there's the capability, because it's not within the NHS's DNA to do that.
Sure. Well, right? I can give you just an example from my sort of day-to-day life. I'm a bit fat, all right? I've been to see the GP about other things, and the GP will say, you know what, Mike, you need to lose a bit of weight, do a bit more exercise, something like that. And I'm sure that's something that GPs might say to lots of people. But you know what? It didn't really result in much action for me. And I suspect that's the same for an awful lot of people.
Yeah, this is, Mike, a great example and exactly why I spent the last 18 months building Do Health, right? It's a preventative health service that does not exist, right? And I just want to tell you why it's so relevant today and why I believe it's the future of preventative health in this country. We will check the 11 most important biomarkers for your health, right? The 11 biomarkers that have the most science behind them and that are all amenable to lifestyle change. And we know from the data, if you can keep these 11 biomarkers in the right range, you dramatically reduce your risk of getting sick in the future. You reduce your risk of diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, maybe 40% of cancers, and many cases of dementia. But you have this general advice, which is lose some weight and move, right? I don't think that's good enough in 2026. So what we do, right, we do those 11 biomarkers and show you what is the current state of your biology. Then together with you, we help you make changes. Now, if you're struggling to make changes, we'll help you figure out why, right? We'll say, are they the right changes for you? Is it just that you had a stressful week at work, or are we barking up the wrong tree here? Do we need to think of something else? And that's what's missing, right? We'll hold your hand through the process. And then, Mike, finally, very importantly, 4 months later, we recheck those 11 biomarkers to see if what you're doing is actually working. If it is, great. If it isn't, we go, okay, that diet that you've been trying clearly isn't doing what we need it to do. Is it the right diet for you, right?
Let me just interrupt you there and get a bit more to basics, possibly, kind of about the need. So I said, you know, the doctor said to me, you need to lose a bit of weight. Didn't work so well for me. But, you know, I look out my window, I see loads of people jogging. We've got Park Run. You know, every Saturday morning, 200,000 people run 3 miles, and we got marathon season. I'm just wondering if, as far as the exercise bit goes, is there really a problem? Everywhere I look, there seem to be people exercising.
Yeah, it's a great point. The problem is that we're only seeing the people who are exercising, right? So the bias is like, you're already seeing the people running Park Run or doing the marathon. You're not seeing the people who are stuck on the sofa at home, who are binge watching box sets. Well, they're not box sets anymore, but binge watching streaming, right? Yes, if you look at the data, it says that physical inactivity is the leading cause of death, of early death worldwide, right? So as a society, we're not doing enough when it comes to movement. But this is where I think people need help. They don't need to just keep hearing this from doctors, right? Actually, I think that most of these conditions that we're talking about are actually preventable. And you will take action if you knew what your risk was, right? That's the difference, right? So out of these 11 biomarkers, quite a few of them you can't get on the NHS. I'll give you two examples, right? Because I think your audience would be really fascinated to hear about these two. Fasting insulin and homocysteine, okay? You know, it's very, very hard to get those tests on the NHS. Why do you need to get them, in my view, right? If you take the principle that these conditions start many years beforehand in the body, one of the earliest markers to go up, right, long before you get the diabetes or the dementia, is your fasting insulin level. If you
say biomarkers, these are just things in your blood.
Blood tests, yeah, sorry.
Right, it's blood
tests, right? If you knew that your fasting insulin has started to go up and that you are on the road to getting that sickness in the future, you're much more likely to act. Whereas if you don't know that and you're saying, well, I feel all right, I know I'm a little bit overweight, but you know what, so are most people around me, you don't do anything. And then people get confused as to why they've got brain fog or they can't remember where their car keys are in their 60s. That process started in your 40s, right? Homocysteine is another test that we do. These are not expensive tests, Mike. That's why it's frustrating for me the NHS don't offer them, right? Because the NHS is good at disease management. I love the NHS. I worked in the NHS for many years, right? it does not do prevention well. And in 2026, we should be doing way better. Homocysteine, right? We know, and Professor David Smith at Oxford University published research on this, I think over 10 years ago now, if you have elevated levels of homocysteine in your bloods, that significantly increases your risk of dementia as you get older. Now, here's the punchline. It's dead easy, Mike, to bring your homocysteine down, right? Yeah, you might be able to do it with some dietary changes, but most people I've seen need to take a B vitamin complex, a special type, to bring their homocysteine down. That is so easy to do, right? But you'll only do it if you know that that is elevated in the first place. And, you know, we've had a few thousand people already go through the Do Health program. They're absolutely loving it. They can't believe how cost-effective it is for what you're actually getting. And we've had about 30% of people so far with elevated homocysteine levels. So we're helping them bring it down. And we know that we are massively reducing the risk of that person getting dementia in the future.
That was going to be my question, actually. Does the having the dementia cause that, or does having that cause the dementia? No, which way around is it?
Having that causes it, because we know that if you bring it down, we know that your risk goes right down. So the reason I put these 11 blood tests together is because they're the ones with the strongest data behind them. But it's not just that. They're also the 11 that are amenable to change, right? That's the empowering thing. Heart disease, strokes, dementia does not have to be in your destiny, even if your parents had it, your grandparents had it. That's the new science that we've realized this century, is that actually most of this is down to how you live your life. So let's find out what your biology is at the moment, and so, let's help you make the right changes.
So do these biomarkers, I mean, they can give you a snapshot of in time where you are. But are they good for long-term prediction? You're kind of suggesting they work for long-term prediction.
They do both. Exactly. They tell you where you are. They tell you what your likely trajectory is. But we've decided with Do Health to recheck them 3 times in a year. Now, why? Why? Because you said something really important before, Mike, which is, you know, doctor told me to lose a bit of weight and move more. And I kind of not really done much since then, right? What helps people make change is when they see something's off, they make a change and they see that it's made a difference, right? If I'm supposing here, but I don't know this to be true because you're not my patient, Mike, right? But I imagine if I saw you a few months ago and I said, hey, Mike, listen, I don't know what your family history is like, but we could talk about that. And then I could say, listen, you're on the road already to getting type 2 diabetes, right? Your fasting insulin should be, let's say, under 5, but it's currently 12. Your homocysteine is currently 15. We want it under 8. I know you feel okay, right? But it means things in your biology are already starting to change. Would you like me to help you make the right changes to bring them down? And then I tell you what, in 3 or 4 months, we'll recheck them to see if it makes a difference.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
I have seen that with patients over the years that once you do that, it's the rechecking that is so important, because then you know, oh my God, my fasting insulin was 12. Now, after 4 months, it's come down to 5. That gives you added motivation to keep going with those changes. Do you know what I mean?
That was going to be one of my key questions, actually, because you get a lot of information at this, you know, with all these biomarkers and what have you. And actually in other things, not necessarily with Do Health, but you know, people love wearables. And they've got information coming out of their ears.
Well,
so does all this information result in action or just lots of information?
Well, Mike, that's why we only check 11, right? So most health apps now are trying to say to you, we do 50, we do 100, we do 200, we do 400, right? There's loads of them out there. I was very clear.
I think that can terrify people.
100%. And one thing I've learned in 25 years of being a doctor is that too much information is paralyzing and it's confusing. So I went the other approach, right? I was like, no, I'm not going to check loads of stuff. It's not necessary. We're overtesting. It will cost more money for people. There's no need for that. These 11 are what move the needle the most. Let's just focus on these, right? Sure, when people join, we do a few more just to get a screen check. We're not missing anything obvious, right? Just to be responsible. But then all our focus is on those 11 because you're absolutely right. For some people, too much data becomes a real problem.
Yeah. So is the result, this is going to sound a bit awful, it's not meant to, is the result you just say, look, Mike, you've got to exercise a bit more, eat a bit better, and sleep a bit more? Because to be honest, I can get that from my mum.
But you're not doing it, are you?
Well, I do do it a little bit.
Okay, but, great. Yeah. Sorry, you said before that you don't,
I know.
Right?
I was just sort of making conversation.
Okay,
but
fine.
I'm certainly not a perfect patient.
No, but yes. Yeah, generally that we know what the good lifestyle advice is, but where it gets different, let's talk about diet, right? You've probably heard from a variety of different sources, what are the principles of a healthy diet? But really, the only way you know if that is the right diet for you at this stage in your life and your current state of health is if certain biomarkers, certain blood tests are in the correct range, right? So yeah. You could be following the general advice from your mum, let's say, or your friends, right?
Actually, it's normally my wife. She's the main.
Yeah. So your wife is giving you the advice with her best intentions, right? Because she wants you to be well. But it could be that your fasting insulin is still high and your blood sugar is still high, which means that may not be the right diet for you. This is where people get confused. This is why some people thrive on a vegan diet, whereas others thrive on a low-carb diet. It's not that either one is wrong. It's what is the right approach for you. And I think, you know, this program that we've created, Do Health, I believe is the future of preventive health. I think if we've got it right, which I believe we have, that the NHS will want to take it on board within a few years and roll it out, because I think this is the only model for preventative health that actually makes sense. And I think if we have got it right, I think it will take a massive burden off the NHS. Because look, in our study, right, 46% of people said that easier access to healthcare services would help, right? You can't always get an appointment with your doctor when you want to. I get that, right? I totally understand that. The other thing, right, Mike, is that if you'd asked me a few years ago, will a health app be able to change the health of the nation? I go, no, I don't think so, right? I don't think so. I've actually changed my mind. I'll tell you why I've changed my mind. What our study also showed us is that a lot of people are embarrassed, right, about going to a doctor and opening up about things that they're concerned about. And I get that, right? But people, when they interact with the Do Health app and the coach on the Do Health app, they're more open. They're sharing the reality of what's happening because there's not a human being there in front of them that they feel a bit, you know, guilty right. about or being judged. And I wasn't expecting that. I was like, oh, wow. So what we do at least once a week is we check in. We say, hey, listen, how was it this week? Did the three things that you agreed to do this week, have you managed to? If they say no, we're not going to make them feel bad. We'll say, okay, that's interesting. Why was that? Do you think it was the wrong approach for you? Or did you have a unusually busy week? We're trying to, in a compassionate, non-judgmental way.
And who is it at the other end asking these questions? Like,
Is it you? No. It's Coach Joy, which is an AI coach that has been trained on basically, you know, you may know I've written 6 books on health and lifestyle change. I teach a lot of doctors. It's trained on that. And so I started off 18 months ago quite skeptical about this. And all I can tell you, Mike, is that the few thousand people who've been through it already are loving it. They say, we love interacting with Coach Joy. We're being more honest. They're very compassionate. They're helping us make change. And so I've got to be honest, I don't think in 25 years since I qualified, I've been more excited about anything than this Do Health app. And I really do believe it's the future of preventative health in this country.
Give me some details. What would Coach Joy suggest that I do with as far as exercise, or what sort of exercise does the coach suggest? Is that different for different people?
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. It depends on what your blood tests show, right? So we're used to, Mike, this model of generic health advice, right? eat your greens, have a balanced diet. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, right? Those are good bits of advice. But let's say, for example, that you were, the blood test showed that you were incredibly insulin resistant and on the road to getting type 2 diabetes, right? We might say, listen, you know, we really need to focus on strength training at the moment, because actually we know that after the age of 30, you lose muscle mass every year. And the more muscle mass you have, the more able you are to store glucose out of your blood, right? We may give different advice to someone else who has maybe a more normal blood sugar. So yes, the general principles are still the same, but we can be very specific because we know your biology. And I think that's what the future of healthcare looks like. It's not general advice anymore. It's getting really specific, what we would call personalized medicine.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk of personalized medicine at the moment. And a lot of that is sort of bound up with digital health. Now, I must admit, I love stories and hearing about digital health, you know, and I've got one of the watches and I do use it. And we actually spend, I did a bit of research because before this talk, we spent £5 billion on like digital health. So these are watches and heart rate monitors and stuff like that. I mean, so a lot of people are getting these things. And I think there's a lot of potential useful stuff, because these things could be made to talk to doctors as well, can't they? And, you know,
yeah, but hold on. You made a good point there. So we're spending £5 billion on this, right? Is it making a difference with our health? The data would suggest, as a population, no. And I think that's because there's a few key elements missing, right? Which we've tried to address with Do Health.
Yeah.
Loads of data may not be enough. A, it can be confusing. But what's more important is that data then should inform some sort of actions in your life, right? And then the third step, it's not just the data, it's not just the actions. It's then to complete the cycle, you need to recheck to make sure that what you thought was going to help does actually help. So I think at the moment, we're in the early stages of health tech, right? Well, I say early stages. I think, you know, a lot of it has been around for 5-10 years. I honestly don't think there's anything out there like Do Health, because I wouldn't have wasted my time trying to create something that already existed, right? I never thought I would build a health app. It was never in my interest when I went to medicine or medical school. I just want to help people understand how many of these conditions are preventable. But I have come to realize that actually, if you can put all the right ingredients together, understand your biology, get the personalized advice, have the support, the continuous support, that's the thing we're missing. You went to see your doctor, they said to do a few things, right? But you're then left to your own devices. You know, do you have enough motivation? Is it the right time in your life? We've tried to address all of these things at Do Health to make it easy for people. And I tell you, the best bit of feedback we've had from people who started, Mike, isn't just that they are loving the app, right? Of course, that's fantastic. A lot of them are saying it's making health fun, right? And that's what I think needs to happen. It's not a question of I can either be healthy or I can enjoy my life. I think if you bring them both together, you're really onto something. And I certainly hope we manage to do that with Do.
Yeah. Well, so I love research and published papers and all this kind of thing. And I tried to do a little bit of digging, admittedly, it was quite quickly, and into how these kind of things have helped us. And there's data around for wearables, and there's, you know, people have written a few things. And actually, for the long term, there's very little data around. And what data there is, it's kind of, yeah, well, actually, it doesn't seem to do very much. In the short term, it might make people take a few more steps and things like that. But very little I could find in sort of the long term that all this marvellous technical stuff kind of did for us.
Yeah, I completely agree, because that a lot of them are missing. They're not closing the loop. They're just giving you information. They're not giving you action. They're not rechecking. So we know for behavior change, you need to close the loop. And, you know, talking about data, well, there's some in the last year or so, there's been two studies at least telling us that maybe 70, maybe even 75% of all dementia cases are preventable. And how are they preventable? It's through these very small and simple lifestyle changes, right? So that's where Do comes into its own. You find out what your risk is. You find out where you're not as good as you could be. We help you, and then we recheck. So yeah, let's see if the data comes out long-term on these wearables. But at the moment, I think the reason why that information is not translating to better outcomes is because there are a few missing pieces there.
I suppose when talking about all things medical, something you've got to ask, any side effects? Now, I know with the tech stuff, people get a bit obsessive, don't they? And trying to beat their
time.
Some
people do, yeah.
Could there be anything similar with Do Health?
I hope not, because I've thought long and hard as to, you know, what are the ingredients that make successful behavior change happen? You know, having been a doctor for 25 years, having seen tens of thousands of patients over my career, I really try to put all my learnings into this, right? So we don't guilt you when you haven't done something. We don't make you feel bad. We don't judge you. It's always about a compassionate approach that we do it in conjunction with you. So I can't honestly see any downside here, because it's not as if we're doing the test and leaving you on your own to get mm-hmm. stressed out. We're like, hey, you know, your home assistance is elevated. Don't worry. We know how to help you address that. So stay with us and we'll help you do that. So I hope not, but I guess time will tell. And Mike, you do it yourself and you can let me know, you know, was there a downside to doing it? Because certainly so far, there's been no downside for the people who've got involved.
Good. I've got one final point, and this is kind of slightly tongue in cheek. I looked at your latest podcast, but a gentleman near Eyal.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. Human beings, we perceive reality as it is because our brain filters or doesn't perceive reality because our brain filters everything through existing beliefs and expectations. And I suspect that's quite relevant to long-term habits and motivation. So
yeah,
that's got to be relevant to what we're talking about here. One way or another.
100%. Well, let's just very quickly just touch on that, right? Because yeah, my chat with Nir was wonderful about all the evidence behind how belief shapes what we actually do in our lives, right? So going back to the start of this conversation, if you believe that chronic disease as you get older is an inevitability, right? And that your genetic destiny at birth is your fate, you're not going to do anything. You're going to not go to the doctor. You won't want to know the information. It's like, what's the point? Because there's nothing I can do. If, on the other hand, you believe, as the data will show you, that most of these chronic diseases are preventable and it depends on the choices you make, not just for 1 week in January, but the choices you make for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, then you're much more likely to engage with them to give you the outcome that you want. So yeah, belief and expectation is a huge part of all of this. I completely agree.
Yeah, good. This is fascinating stuff. So thanks for taking the time to chat about it. If people are listening and think, right, I would like to find out a bit more about this, so, you know, to change my life for the long term, not just in the next month, can you recommend some good resources where people can, you know, just find out a little bit more?
About what? About specific health issues?
Yeah, yeah. About what? Just about how to make their chances of having a better long life without dementia, etc., you know, better.
Yeah, look, of course, there's so much information out there, so it gets confusing for people. Look, I qualify from Edinburgh Medical School in 2001, okay? I've got an immunology degree, a medical degree. I've done my specialist exams, what are called MRCP, and my GP exams, what are called MRCGP. So I have lots of qualification. And the podcast you mentioned, my show is called Feel Better, Live More. And it's been going for 8.5 years. And the only goal with every weekly show from me is to help you understand your health and your life better so you can make different decisions, right? So I think for some people, it's That'd been be an incredible start. Resource, and I probably direct them there. And if they want to check out what Do Health is all about, I'd point them to dohealth.co, which is the homepage where you can see all of the information.
Excellent. This is fascinating stuff. I'm going to keep looking at this more. And perhaps I should invite you back in a year's time to see how it's going and kind of the results that are coming out of it.
Mike, well, listen, why don't we do that? Because we're going to be getting data all the time, right? We've already found, for example, that maybe 30% of people so far have got these elevated homocysteine levels that they didn't even know about, right? But in a year's time, we'll have even more data. So let's put a date in the diary, and in 12 months, I can share with you what's actually happened.
I love data. Perhaps I should start creating some data of my own and get involved.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a good thing for you. And, you know, all I say is, what have you got to lose, right? I'd say not very much.
Excellent. Look, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to chat. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much to my guest on this week's show, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, talking about building health resilience. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.